as I get older, it's less about competing with the people on the track and more about competing with myself. And, you know, I really understand that idea of just being the best that you can be.
The Diz Runs With Podcast, episode 320, starts in 3, 2. Welcome back to the Diz Runs With Podcast, where I talk with runners from all corners of the running world about running, life, and everything in between. I'm your host, Denny Cray, and it's just about time to head out the door for an easy run and a great conversation. So let's get started. Hey guys, today's episode of the show is brought to you in part by Picky Bars, and more specifically, the Picky Club. I've been a member for, gosh, it's been probably a year and a half now, and there's nothing better than getting a box of just some of the best nutrition bars, you know, every month delivered to the doorstep. For me, the key is that they're wheat-free, they're gluten-free, which is something that I don't have a severe allergy, but I definitely feel better when I'm limiting the amount of gluten that I take in. So if you do have an allergy, or if you're just like me and want to avoid gluten, I can't recommend Picky Bars enough. And if you join the Picky Club and you use the code Denny Cray, all one word, DennyKrahe, before the end of October 2016, you'll save $10 off of the first month. So give it a shot and see what you think. And if I can be so bold, I'd recommend Lauren's Mega Nuts and Moroccan Me Crazy as two of the best flavors that they have. This episode is also brought to you by The Coterie, which is the hybrid coaching program that I lead up. So if you are interested in possibly working with a coach to help take your running to the next level, check out The Coterie and see if it might be the right thing for you. Dizruns.com/coterie. And now, let's get on with today's episode of the show. Hey guys, I'm going to have my hands full keeping up with my guest today because this guy is fast, as in two-time Olympian fast. But my guest today is much more than just someone who runs really, really, really quickly around a track. He's also an entrepreneur, an Eagle Scout, an avid outdoorsman, a beast in the beer mile, and an advocate for the rights of athletes. I'm looking forward to being able to share a few laps in the slow lane today with Mr. Nick Simmons. Thanks for joining us today, Nick, and welcome to the show.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I'm excited for this one.
Yeah, definitely. I'm looking forward to it. And guys, if you've been hiding under a rock for the last decade or so and you don't know who Nick is, you can check out all of his stuff and information and background at nicksimmons.com. That's Nick, just like it should be spelled, N-I-C-K, but Simmons is S-Y-M-M-O-N-D-S.com. And on Twitter, Instagram, same handle, both places. It's just his name, real simple, Nick Simmons. And I'll have the links to those places to connect with him, and you know, anything else that makes sense that we talk about to reference in the show notes for today's episode, which you can find at dizruns.com/320. So, Nick, the way we always start off the show is with a pretty simple and straightforward question. And sometimes with the elites, I think I know where they're going to go with it, and then they surprise me. And sometimes it's right what I expect. But I'm just going to ask it and see what happens. And that's just to ask, what is your favorite distance to race and why?
Oh, well, I'm predictable. You know what I'm going to say. It's the 800. I've made my career on it. It is an event that I like to say chose me. I don't think anyone really chooses the 800. It's just a brutal, killer event. Some people say it's the hardest event in track and field. I don't know that I'd agree with that necessarily. I think there's some harder ones out there. But, you know, I grew up as a distance runner. I started out competitive running as a 5K runner in cross country in high school. And when I finally went out for the track team, you know, I started as a 2-miler. And just as I went through puberty and got bigger and stronger, gradually worked my way down to the 8. And though I ran the 8 and the mile in college pretty much equally, it was in 2007 when I had my first professional year, that the coach at the time, Frank Gagliano, said, you got to pick one. You know, I can train you to be a great miler. I can train you to be a great 800 meter runner, but I can't train you to be great at both. And at the time, you know, I was young and I felt my speed was untapped and I chose the 8. And here I am, you know, over a decade later, right, Still running 2 laps.
Right, right. What, if you had to rate them, what would you say is a little bit harder than the 800?
You know, I think that the 400 hurdles is just a crazy event. And people often say, when they have this conversation, they say 400 hurdles and 8, you know, from a anaerobic standpoint, have to be mentioned, because right, they're actually very similar training, believe it or not. You have to have an engine that can go all day. You have to have incredible speed. You have to be able to push through lactic acid, like, you know, that just makes your legs absolute cement. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that one I've always had a lot of respect for. At least when I'm dying that last 100 meters, I don't have to jump over anything.
Exactly.
Yeah. And for the same reason, I'd say the steeplechase is just really brutal. You know, I can't, I watch Evan, you know, and when he went down in Paris, I can't believe people don't go down every time they try to jump over one of those
Seriously,
things.
So yeah.
That's always been a particularly impressive event. So yeah, I would say probably if I had to pick an event that I really am glad I didn't have to run, it would be the 400 hurdles.
Yeah, that's I've heard that. When I was in grad school, I'm an athletic trainer by trade, so I actually worked with the track and field team at Middle Tennessee State for a couple of years, and that's what we would have to try to like beg people, you know, like scholarship athletes, and they're like, yeah, no, I'm gonna stick with you know my two or three events, like that's good, like you know, where's a walk on, like get a walk on to do the 400 hurdles, like nobody wants.
I always say running around the track is hard enough. Why would you want to put stuff in your way?
Yeah, get in the way. Yeah, exactly. I don't know. I don't know what it's like to go that fast. Like at my fast pace, I'm still like, yeah, you know, whatever. I'll jump over some. But I mean, I don't know. I never ran track in at any level. I got into running a little bit later in life and more distance stuff. But yeah, the hurdles and I mean, just, you know, watching at elite, you know, even, you know, college, even D1 college events. And certainly when you watch on TV or, you know, if you need to be in person at a real high level event, like, man, just I don't even know how to say it. Just like you said, something in the way, like you got to, you know, count your steps, or at least have your stride rate, try to stay as consistent as possible. Like, it's just one extra variable that you don't want to have to deal with when you're just gassed at the end of a race. So you said that the 800 meter kind of chose you. Once you focused on it, did you start seeing the success right away, or was it something that you really had to work at to kind of get? I mean, obviously you're gonna have to work to get to the level that you got to, but did it fall into place pretty quickly, or was it a longer process than you had maybe anticipated?
It did, actually. Yeah, no, I was really surprised, because you know, when you come out of college, that first year as a pro can be really, really difficult. I mean, you're losing a lot of resources. Mm-hmm. Everything's changing. New coach, new teammates, new city. You know, in college, I every weekend I either raced the 8 or the mile, and it seemed that my last year as a collegian, I was PRing almost every single time I stepped on the track, and in both events. So I really didn't know which one was my best event. But as I said, in 2007, I chose the 8, and my training shifted radically. It really became more speed focused and speed endurance focused. And I wasn't really seeing the returns that I was hoping for. You know, I'd run 145.8 as a 22-year-old in college. And I hadn't broken that. I hadn't bettered that time at all my first year as a pro. And I remember it was late May, early June, and I just thought, well, I'm going to be one of those guys who doesn't get to PR his first year as a pro. You know, and I was sad about it, but I was thinking to myself, you know, that's not unusual.
There's a long line of people that can probably say that.
Yeah, exactly. And then I was fortunate enough to get into the Prefontaine Classic that year, that, you know, arguably the greatest track and field race run on U.S. soil. Mm-hmm. And I was 23 years old, you know, absolute rookie. And I went in ranked like 14th out of 15 competitors, and I ended up winning it, beating the Olympic champion at the time, Yuri Borzakovsky. And I ran 144.54 that day. So almost, you know, literally a full second faster than I'd ever run beforehand. And I'm saying, just days before that, I'm kind of moping around saying I'm never going to be the guy that you know, comes out of college and does something special. And that day I did something very special, and it launched my international, you know, career. Really, I went on to make my first world team that year and go make my first semifinals at a world championships. So it was a phenomenal moment. It's one of those moments where, you know, I always say every time you step on the track, you can absolutely redefine what you thought was capable of, what you personally thought you physically could do. You can change the course of your life every time you step on that track. And that was a day where I had low self-confidence, but still managed to change my life with one race, just two laps.
Mm-hmm. The low self-confidence going into that race, you know, obviously in distance running, which is something I'm more familiar with and probably what most of the folks that listen to this are a bit more familiar with, you know, like that mental piece can be, I mean, just so, for me, it's the hardest part, you know, like the last 10K of a marathon or the last, you know, 5K of anything. I mean, just, you know, when you're going all out and you're like, man, I still got 3 miles to go. Like this is brutal. Your mind starts playing tricks on you. How is that different when it is just two laps? Like how were you able to at that level with, you know, with having the mental struggles that you're having and a pretty legitimately stacked field, shut down the mental doubt and just, and I mean, not only run your race, but run, I mean, at that point, probably the race of, well, clearly the race of your life at that point.
Yeah. It's so funny because I think as distance runners, we race so infrequently. It's not that we're running every 3 days, like maybe a sprinter might, but you know, if you're talking about a marathon, you might only be racing twice a year. And in my case at the 800, I'm racing once every 2 weeks. So, you know, if I have bad races or mostly I'm keying off my workouts, if my workouts aren't going well, then I just assume I'm not in shape or, you know, I've mismanaged my training somehow. And so you can kind of have that self-doubt creep in, but so often with distance runners, it's about the peak, right? It's about tapering. It's about accumulating all of that strength work and then sharpening that pencil and bringing it on the day that counts. And for me in 2007, that's what it was. You know, Frank Gagliano, I never should have doubted for 2 seconds. He's one of the most accomplished middle distance coaches the U.S. has ever seen. And what he had done is really front loaded my legs with some really great distance workouts. And my engine was strong, but my legs weren't quite sharpened yet. And that week leading into pre, or the 2 weeks leading into pre, he really allowed me to freshen up. And so emotionally, I'm thinking about how my workouts aren't going great. But I have always been the kind of guy that can, I guess you would say I'm game ready. So when I step on that track, you know, whether I'm having an argument with my girlfriend, whether I'm worried about my finances, whether workouts haven't been going great, I can give you about a minute and 45 seconds worth of effort. You know, I can't do it in every race. I probably really can't. You know, in the mile or a 5K, that self-doubt and those worries start to creep into my brain. But for a minute and 45 seconds, I can get into that flow state, and I can just 100% channel every bit of my being into racing. And that day, that's what I did. I put all that self-doubt behind me, and I said, here's an opportunity that I don't want to waste. I don't know what's going to happen. Maybe I'll win it. Maybe I'll finish dead last, but this is an opportunity and I need to game up. Mm-hmm. And fortunately my body did what I had trained it to do, and it gamed up.
Right. How did that minute and 45 seconds change? I mean, beyond the obvious that it put you on the map and led to, it was certainly a catapult to what your career has turned into at this point. But maybe beyond the track, how did that moment, or that race in particular, kind of change your life or change you at that point in time?
I think more than anything, it just reaffirmed the sacrifices that I had been making. So, you know, in college, I studied biochemistry. I went to a little Division III school, Willamette University, because I wanted to be a student athlete. And most D1 schools said, well, you can't be pre-med here. You can't study what you want to study because, you know, the labs will interfere with practice. And, you know, that sounded crazy to me. I was like, if I'm going to school, it's to be a student. And I want to make that my number one priority. So at Willamette University, I was able to do that. And it wasn't until, you know, my senior year that I decided to put the medical school plan on the back burner and really focus on running. And that was scary for me. You know, I come from a family of doctors. I would have been a fourth generation surgeon. And my grandpa, you know, shook his head at me. He says, you're throwing your life away chasing this running thing. And, you know, fortunately, my parents were really supportive. But I had this feeling, you know, as I turned pro, making literally pennies, living like a college kid, you know, fresh out of college, just it was not the professional athlete lifestyle that you dream of, certainly. But I'm making these sacrifices, and I'm saying to myself, you know, can I make an Olympic team? Can I train? Can I devote every bit of my time and energy to training and ultimately become an Olympian in 2008? And so to run that race in 2007, to beat the defending Olympic champion, to run a world competitive time of 1:44:54, I kind of went home that day shaking my head like, wow, it's really going to happen for me. You know, up until that point, I felt like maybe all these sacrifices were for nothing. But at that moment, I said to myself, I'm going to be an Olympian. There's no question in my mind. All I have to do is stay as good as I am today and not do something stupid, and I'm going to make that Olympic team. And that's exactly what happened. I ended up going back to Eugene a year later and won the Olympic trials with a very similar time and a very similar tactic to sit and kick on the leaders and blow by them on the home stretch. And like as important as 2007 was, you know, in for better or for worse, in this country, there are two types of runners, those that have made an Olympic team and those that haven't, you know, when you're talking about the elites. And so, in 2008 when I punched my ticket to Beijing, that was what made all the sacrifice worth it. And looking back, I understand now that, you know, it's not all about the Olympics. It's not all about medals. It's about the journey and the experience and the development of one's character. But at the time, at 24, I sure didn't appreciate that. I just said, I've made a lot of sacrifices. I want to be a damn Olympian.
No, exactly. Exactly. Was the Olympics your first Team USA event, or had you done something? I can't remember.
The World Championships in 2007 in Osaka, Japan was my first time on a Team USA, world or Olympic championship team. But the 08 was my second outdoor team. My third team technically, because I'd made the 2008 indoor team as well.
What's it like to walk out on the track with the red, white, and blue on your jersey?
Well, I don't know about that, because when you walk out on a track in a world or Olympic games, you try to just to pretend that it's just any other race.
Yeah. Can you do that though?
Yeah, I'm actually I've trained myself, to compartmentalize things in my mind. And when I walk out on an Olympic final, like I ran in 2012 at the London Olympic Games, you put your head down, you stare at the track, you don't look up to the 90,000 people watching you. You certainly don't think about the 3 billion people at home watching you. You stare at the track, you look at the white lines, and you say, huh, this track is 400 meters around, just like every other track I've ever run on. I'm just doing what I have done for the last 20 years, and you calm yourself down that way. The most proud moment that I had involving Team USA jersey was actually in 2006. I just turned pro and was planning on taking the summer off. And my agent called up and said that he had two races lined up for me in Europe. And I didn't really want to go over to Europe and race because I had run a full collegiate season, was tired and wanted to rest up. But I said as much. I said, I'm shutting it down. I don't really want to race anymore. And he said, well, there's Team USA gear in it for you. And, to get that box of Team USA gear, I'd have done just about anything. I'd have traveled to Antarctica to race.
Right.
So I committed to two races in Europe, and I came home and had this giant cardboard box of Team USA gear. And I pulled every single piece out. I ripped off all the plastic. I put every single piece on and did a little impromptu photo shoot in the backyard with my dad. And I've had a lot of proud moments racing for Team USA, but that moment standing in my backyard, in the house I grew up in with my Team USA jersey on, that to this day is still the proudest moment I ever had.
Yeah, something that so few people will ever be able to experience. I can't imagine like that first time of like you can buy a Team USA something, but man, I earned this. Like I did it the hard way. It's pretty awesome.
Absolutely. And unfortunately that feeling, subsides over the years as you make more teams. I've made 10 teams now, and it's still special, but that first moment when you put it on, it's just something totally different. It's indescribable.
Yeah, I'm sure. So the first Olympic experience in 2008 and then finishing, what was it, fifth in 2012 with a time that was stupid, but everybody else's times were so much more ridiculously stupid.
My time there would have won an Olympic medal at every single previous Olympic Games except for that one. So that was a bitter pill to swallow. But, if you really do sit back and think about it, hey, it's not all about the medals. It's about bringing the greatest race you can at the highest level of competition. That's what I did. I ran nearly a full second personal best at that Olympic final. I to this day, it's the fastest I've ever run over 800 meters. And there's just a certain amount of pride that you take when you are able to do that. As an athlete, that's all you can really ask of yourself, is to bring your best product on the highest stage of competition. So I'm not pissed that I don't have a medal. I'd like to have had a medal that day, but I did everything I could, and there's no shame in running 142.9.
Right. No, certainly not. And I wonder, and obviously for a runner like me, who's not ever gonna, make a national team, not ever gonna make any money as a runner. Obviously for me, the battle is always with myself and how can I improve? Can I do better in training? Can I, kick harder at the end? Can I hold the pace? Whatever it is, whatever that race's goal in particular is, and oftentimes it's time related. So, just a new PR or a good finish or whatever, negative split, like those are all victories to celebrate. But I just have to feel like maybe at this point it's pretty easy, or maybe not pretty easy, but slightly less painful to look back on it. But like, how difficult is it when, I mean, like you said, you did everything you could. And I get the idea of like, man, I ran the best race of my life. Like these other guys were just faster today, but it's still got to be, I don't know, like deflating maybe, or I mean.
Yeah, I think if you'd asked me, you know, in my late 20s, I'd have said it was still really hard to talk about, you know, but as I get older, it's less about competing with the people on the track and more about competing with myself. And, you know, I really understand that idea of just being the best that you can be now. And I can only say that because I'm about to turn 33. In my 20s, I wasn't running to see how good I could be. I was running to beat the crap out of people. I mean, that's true. Every day I trained, I wasn't saying, oh, I can't wait to see how good I can be. I'm like, I want to kick the crap out of people on the track. I want to embarrass them in the last 100 meters. It's that young bravado, you know, sense of you know, just trying to prove yourself. And you can only do that through competition, I think. But now at 33, I feel that I've probably run my best times. I saw how good I could get. And it's less about trying to embarrass people on the track. It's more about saying to myself, I wonder if I can figure out how to hack my training with my coach. If we can figure out how to keep me healthy, get me on the track in good shape, and make one more team, you know, in 2017, that's what gets me excited. I don't know that I'm going to win a medal. And right. You know, at 25, if I said I'm not totally sure I can win a medal, I would have just retired that day. But now it's more about, it's about being creative, about having fun with the training, interacting with my teammates and my coach, and being a great training partner, and seeing what I can do at the age of 33. I think I've got some great races left in my legs, and I want to prove that to myself more than I need to prove that to my competition.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned the injuries, and obviously, you know, this past summer with the injury kept you out of the trials, and obviously out of the trials means out of the Olympics. First of all, was that kind of your first major injury? Because like I said, being an athletic trainer, that's kind of I nerd out on running injuries. And how did you deal with the mental, emotional side of, like, you know, like the Olympics once every 4 years, like this is another chance. And you know, you only get so many of them in a lifetime. Like how did that process play out for you?
Yeah. I mean, it was difficult. I'll take you guys back a little ways, and this could be a long story, but I'll try to keep it short. So in 2014, I really had my first serious injury. You know, I prided myself on being one of the most durable athletes out there, and for, you know, nearly 15 years, never really had to deal with too many injuries. But in 2014, I got an avulsion stress fracture in my knee, and it cost me the entire season. And I was diagnosed with it in about, I want to say, late April. And the doctor said, you know, you're probably not going to run competitively for another 6 months. And, you know, to have to miss your first season in 15 years, I didn't know what to do. I went into a really deep depression, and I just laid there staring at the ceiling every morning because I didn't have a sense of purpose. Mm-hmm. You know, I really didn't have any reason to get out of bed. I know that sounds melodramatic, but, you know, when training and being the best athlete you can be has been your only purpose for, you know, so many years, mm-hmm. it's really hard to get excited about anything. And so, you know, fortunately, I have a really great mentor. His name's Sam Lepre, and he's been with me since I was 18 and overseen, you know, most aspects of my career. You know, I told him I'm really depressed. I don't know what to do with my days. And we had started some businesses before and had this idea to start another business. And he said, I think it's time for us to finally start, you know, Run Gum. And that's what our company is now. It's called Run Gum. Essentially what it is everything that's in an energy drink put into two pieces of chewing gum. And you might say, why chewing gum? Chewing gum as a delivery vehicle presents so many advantages. It allows us to absorb these stimulants sublingually, which can be absorbed, you know, up to 5 times faster. So caffeine, taurine, B vitamins, you know, they've been shown to have performance enhancing effects on endurance athletics. Mm-hmm. They're also completely legal. You know, WADA and USADA have no limitations on these for professional athletes. Mm-hmm. So I used to drink energy drinks and feel really phenomenal, really good when I was working out or racing, but I would more often than not throw them up because who wants heavy acidic liquid sloshing around in their stomachs? So we created this product, Run Gum, mostly for me because I needed it. And it wasn't until that injury where I looked at Sam and Sam looked at me and we said, well, we've got 6 months, you know, of no training, no rehab, just sitting around resting, this is the moment that we need to bring Run Gum to market. And so for those 6 months, we really worked hard developing the formula. You know, like, as I said, I have a degree in biochemistry, so I worked really hard on the formula, the packaging, inventory, everything that goes into bringing a product to market. And it was in October of 2014 that we launched Run Gum. So we're actually about to celebrate our 2-year anniversary.
Congratulations.
But that, thanks so much. Yeah, it's been phenomenal to work on it. It's been phenomenal to hear people. You know, we had this great text the other day from someone that said they were pacing someone to their Boston Marathon qualifying time, and in the last mile they fell off pace and they were about to miss out by only 10 or 15 seconds on their Boston Marathon qualifying time. The pacer handed this athlete a piece of Run Gum. And you know, at that point, it's probably less biochemical than it is maybe just believing in yourself or believing in the product. And we've created such a strong brand that you know, that has a certain effect as well. But the struggling athlete chewed a piece of Run Gum and went on to not only break or qualify for Boston, but actually, you know, make up the 15 seconds and then some.
Good.
So, you know, that's a story that just, you know, it gives me such a huge sense of pride that we've created a product that can help people, you know, as it's helped me. But to get back to your original question, you know, this year I started to slip into that depression again. I said to myself, I'm not going to get to be a 3-time Olympian. I put in all the work. I have the qualifying time and I'm not going to get to go to Rio. And for a few hours, I started to slip into that depression that I felt in 2014. And then I reminded myself how grateful I should be that my body's held up as long as it has. There's not a lot of 32-year-old professional half milers out there.
Right.
And I also reminded myself that in 2014, I had already learned this lesson, that I had created something that gave me purpose. And as soon as I realized the gift of time that I'd just been given from a fractured ankle, I re-upped my dedication to Run Gum. I transferred my energies from training to working on my company. And I even went so far as to switch my roles in the company from co-founder / athlete to CEO. And for the last 6 months, I've been really actively working as the CEO of Run Gum.
How do you see the balance once you get back to training, once your ankle's healed up and you're ready to go? I'm sure it's possible to wear both hats of CEO and, you know, elite professional runner,
tough.
But it's tough. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Is that going to be the goal, is to do both or to back off on the gum a little, Run Gum a little bit?
That's such a great question. If you'd asked me back in June when I was still kind of bitter, not kind of bitter, super bitter about not being able to run, I'd have said, you know what? I think it's time for me to just hang up my spikes. I need to focus on Run Gum at this point. But you know, now that I've had a chance to heal and that I'm back running, I have that itch to compete again, and I'm not ready to hang up my spikes. I'd like to run one more year and see if I can make one more team, you know, the world championship team in London. And so this is going to be one of the most interesting and challenging years of my entire career, because I still need to be the CEO of Run Gum, and it needs a lot of my attention, and I still need to train as though I want to be the best in the world. And that demands a lot of attention. So fortunately, I'm so lucky to have Danny Mackey and Brooks running on my side. They understand that, you know, at 33, I have a lot going on. Danny is so accommodating and allows me to be who I am, allows me to work on my business and schedule practices, you know, taking into account the other commitments that I have. With another team or working for another company, I don't know if I could make both work. Mm-hmm. I do believe that with Brooks running and with their support and with Danny Mackey's ability to respond to all of this that I have on my plate, I think that we can be successful at both.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's you know, there's only so many hours in a day, but if you've got the right team around you, I mean, that can make a lot of, you know, on both sides, both on the running side and on the running side.
Oh, absolutely. And I couldn't do it without a great team in the Brooks Beast TC and all the support that I have there. But I sure as heck couldn't do it at the Run Gum side without great partners there. I mean, my business partner, Sam Lepre, you know, if I have to take off to race internationally for a week, he holds down the fort and you know, shoulders my share of the responsibilities. Our COO, Nathan Woods, is we call him the chief of stuff because really he's the brains of the operation. And they understand that racing and running is important to me, and that, you know, if I'm running well, that energy and that self-confidence pours over into my business work as well. And so they've been very supportive for the last 2 years. I think that you know, my future obviously is not on the track. It's as the CEO of Run Gum. But this year, I want to finish on top. I've made 10 teams. I believe I can make one more. Mm-hmm. And I think it would be just the perfect end to a really great career if I could make one more team.
No, I mean, that's no better way to go out than to go out, you know, right on top. I mean, that's that, you know, if you had to write the script, that's how you'd write it every time.
Absolutely.
Have you thought about what running is going to look like after 2017 at all?
Yeah, you know, I think I'm a guy who didn't love running when I started in high school. I hated running. I absolutely hated it. I hated the sacrifices. I hated the workouts. I didn't even love the competition. I just liked that I was good at it. You know, I wanted to be good at something, and I was good at running. But somewhere along the line, and probably in my late 20s, I actually fell in love with running. And I will say this, I still hate training. I think that, you know, training is time away from home, time away from your family. It's sacrifices. It's intervals until you throw up. Mm-hmm. That sucks. But running is, to me, it provides so much. It's the structure. It's the sense of well-being. It's getting out with my friends. I absolutely love running, and I'll run every day till the day I can't, or till the day I die. But for me, you know, the perfect run is, you know, 7 or 8 a.m. out for 40 to 60 minutes, just being with nature, you know, running the trails here in Eugene or Seattle. And I want to do that forever. And I don't know how that translates into competition. Certainly, I want to run a marathon one day. I've set, you know, my sights on climbing some really big mountains. So I can see running and lifting being a really important part of that training. But yeah, I think when I do hang up my spikes and say goodbye to the track, I'm going to keep running just because I think that it does add so much to one's life.
Yeah. Just a different chapter. And I mean, almost like starting a whole new career. If you go basically, you know, kind of focus almost exclusively on trails, that's a whole different animal than a couple laps around, you know, 145 around the track.
Well, and I say this semi-joking, but I got to run a marathon, right? I mean, I'm a half miler. The longest run I've ever done is a half marathon. And afterwards, the thought of doing it again, seemed physically impossible. But one of these days, I'm going to have to strap on a good pair of Brooks running shoes, my Ravennas, and run 26.2 miles. I don't know if I can physically do it, but I think that when I retire from track and field, I'll probably pick a great marathon and, mm-hmm. and give it a try.
You know, it's whenever I talk to ultra runners, I always, you know, half jokingly and definitely half serious say, you know, 26.2 is enough for me. Like, I have no desire to go any farther than that. And then they always tell me that, you know, when the finish line is twice as far, like, you know, you run a different race. So, you know, I'm going to pass that advice back to you. Like, you know, at the end of an 800, you probably couldn't imagine of doing two more laps,
but
you've done 1500 before. So, like, you know, you know, you can do it. So.
Yeah, but it's so foreign to me. You know, I've got an engine that's great for, like I said, a minute and 45 seconds. Trying to absolutely strip down that engine, strip it down, put it into a new machine, and try to get it to go for 3 hours, it just seems so foreign to me. But, you know, there was a time, you know, when I was young and the 800 seemed foreign to me when I was a 5K runner. And so it's really incredible what the human body does how it responds to different stimulus. And I think that I could take this engine and put it towards, you know, marathon training, strip it down a little bit. I weigh about 170 pounds. That's not going to be good for 26 miles. But if I could strip it down, get down to about, 150, I think I could break 3 hours, which would be my goal.
At 170, like you won't be. It might sound like you're big for a marathon, but there'll be plenty of people at 3 hours that are still 100.
Well, and that's the thing is I've been to marathons and helped out before, and you know you see guys that are like 200 plus. You know, I think they call it the Clydesdale division, and you're just like, man, if that guy who's clearly a bodybuilder can run 26 miles, you know, I have to be able to do it. So I know I make it a big monster in my head, but I think I can tackle it one day.
Yeah, no, you'll definitely be able to. I can't wait to see what race you decide to run in. And I wouldn't be surprised if you with running the trails in the mountains, if you get hooked into that culture and end up going even farther than 26.2 at some point down the road.
One day, baby steps, right?
Yeah, definitely, definitely. Shifting back a little bit to, you know, kind of life off the track and outside of running, you know, with Run Gum. And just kind of entrepreneurship in general, is that something that was always kind of something that you maybe wanted to do, or was it just kind of an opportunity that presented itself in your life at that time?
It was kind of, you know, like I said, I was training to be a doctor, and I would have gone back to medical school if I hadn't made the Olympic team in 08. But having made the team in 08, I signed a four-year deal to get me to the 2012 Olympics. And I loved the running lifestyle initially when I got out of college. You know, having been a student and an athlete and in the Greek system and working a part-time job, like, it was a lot. And so when I first turned pro, I'm like, oh my gosh, I have all this time and energy to just focus on running. That's great. But eventually that wasn't enough. And in my mid-20s, I felt that I was being physically stimulated each day from training, but mentally I wasn't doing anything, and it made me really depressed. I had all this free time and I didn't know where to channel my energy and my time. And so I went to my mentor, Sam Lepre, and we started a business. We started actually building tanning salons here in the Pacific Northwest. And not that I'm a huge advocate of tanning, but it's big business here, and we wanted to learn franchising. And so I think I was 25 when we created the Tan Republic franchise here in Eugene, Oregon. And we built four salons and ultimately sold them off to another franchisor so that we could take those profits and create a product that we really believed in and a company that we really believed in. That's Run Gum. Mm-hmm. So Run Gum is self-funded. Sam and I own 100% of the company between the two of us. It's unusual, but it could only happen because we were able to take those profits from a previous enterprise. So I don't know if entrepreneurship was always in there. I think a lot of times you're just born an entrepreneur. Mm-hmm. So I did have some of that drive and that dedication that you need to be an entrepreneur. And certainly the characteristics that make a great athlete can make a great entrepreneur. But once we started building the salons, once we made that first check, once I sat back and I'm like, wow, we put all the puzzle pieces together and now the puzzle's working, I was hooked. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know what business I wanted to be in. I just knew I wanted to own my own business. And Gold Medal LLC is the company that's doing business as Run Gum. And Sam actually named it Gold Medal LLC. He says, you might not win an Olympic gold medal, but you know, this one is going to be just as lucrative and just as exciting. And it really has been. Mm. Each day I wake up and I'm physically stimulated by my training, and then I shift gears about 1 o'clock and I start working on the business and I'm mentally stimulated. And both take equal focus in my life. And each day I'm working from about 6 a.m. to, you know, 6 p.m. And I'm so busy and I've never been happier. Mm-hmm. I really believe that humans need a sense of purpose and need to be working. And now I'm ticking both boxes, the mental and the physical. And I love every day. I feel so alive when I'm training, and I feel so alive when I'm working on Run Gum.
That's awesome. I mean, and it's one of those things where I've kind of experienced too, where it's like, you know, if I don't run for whatever reason, if I oversleep, or if I'm dealing with a little nagging something, I can't get a run in, like my performance at work that day isn't as good, you know? And it's like, yeah, like how they bleed together one to the next.
Well, I really feel like my brain doesn't work as well. Mm-hmm. I don't know if anyone else feels this way, but if I train really hard, if I go out and do 5 by a mile, you know, like then I'm tired and mm-hmm. I don't think clearly because I'm exhausted, but that 30 or 40 minute run in the morning, just to kind of like shake off the sleep and get your body wired and going, my creativity and the synapses in my brain, they fire so much better if I get that run, just a little bit of stimulus in the morning. So I do really believe that they go together. Or if I'm having a bad day in the office and I come home and go for a little run and blow off some of that steam, I'm better for it. So right. Yeah, really, truly, you know, running and work complement each other very well.
Definitely. You've mentioned a couple times between med school and then kind of learning the business side of things, learning franchising and starting Run Gum, obviously. It sounds like education and learning is something that's important to you. Have you found there to be, you know, we just kind of talked about the correlation or the benefit of the exercise, the physical to the mental. Have you seen anything going back the other way where exercise in the brain helps you to become a better runner too?
Well, I think about how many athletes we know that are so great in college and they leave the collegiate system and really, really struggle. Mm. And I'm not saying that there's a direct correlation between, you know, studying and running well, but I will say there's something to be said for structure. And the collegiate system provides a ton of structure, and having to report to class, having to manage your time, having to report to practice, there's just no room for distractions. And I think that humans, you know, are prone to procrastination. They're prone to distractions and giving in to temptation. And for me, I perform better when my day's full. You know, I perform better when I have to get my butt out of bed at 6, because if I don't, I'm not going to be able to take care of all the things I need to take care of. So I know some athletes that you know, that struggle with the lack of structure. And to those athletes, I would say, go get a part-time job,
right.
You know, go back to school and study something. Not that you need to, just that the structure provides so much support for everything that you're trying to do.
Well, and it kind of goes hand in hand too with the I don't have time argument. And it's like once you put the structure in place, whether it's, you know, to start running on top of work and family and all the other responsibilities of life or whatever it is, like once you like you said, that structure, once you have that structure in place, like all of the time that you lose screwing around on social media, which I love doing, but like it can be a time suck, like nobody's business.
Absolutely.
You know, you start eliminating some of that time, and all of a sudden it's like, wow, I've got an extra 45 minutes here. Like I could go for a 30 minute run and still have time to like get back to work. Like you find the time if you have the structure a lot of times.
Absolutely. You do.
So as we're getting kind of close to wrapping up, Nick, one of the ways I like to kind of end the show, kind of put a bow on things, is to ask what I call kind of a philosophical question. I've got a handful of them, and I just kind of randomly pick one. And they're just very, very open-ended. Obviously, no right, no wrong type of answer, and something that sometimes it's literally like a 5 or 6 word answer, and sometimes people can go on for 10 or 15 minutes on it. And either way, it's fine. I just love kind of opening up the box and seeing what happens. And I think the question I'd love to ask you is you know, in your time as a runner and in your time as running at you know, arguably the highest level that anyone can run at in the world. What has running taught you, not only about yourself, but also about other people that you've interacted with and come across during the course of your career?
Well, that's a great question. And I'm glad you're asking me today, you know, in my early to mid 30s and not in my 20s.
Perspective's a little 20s, different.
It's so different. It's just so different. And every single, you know, aspect of my life, whether it was high school or college or post-collegiate or now, you know, as I'm nearing retirement, there's just the way you would approach that question or the answer to that question is so different. You know, when I was younger, again, running taught me that hard work and dedication, you know, pays me dividends. Mm-hmm. And it's all about me and being successful and putting money in my pocket and kicking the crap out of other people. And that's, I don't think that's unusual. You know, I think that's how you get to be where you're at, you know, as a competitive runner, and how you get to be an Olympian, how you get to beat at the very, very top. But it's a very hard way to live your life. You know, it's selfish and it is, you know, self-gratifying, but it's stressful. You know, if you're training and things go a little bit wrong, you know, I would slip into really not just depression, but anger, you know, and frustration. It was hard to control my feelings. At 32, running has given me so much. It's taken me around the world. I've raced in 34 different countries. It's put money in my pocket. You know, I was able to weather the Great Recession pretty well with a nice contract. It's given me friendships and so much. But I think if I look back on running and if I say what's the number one thing I'm grateful for, it's a sense of purpose. It's a sense of being one with nature. It's just connecting with the world. You know, when I go out and I strap on my shoes and I run, you know, 60 minutes, whether it's through a forest or through a new city, it connects me with the earth and civilization and in a way that nothing else ever has.
Yeah, it's a great way to look at it. What about among other people? Have you learned about, I mean, I'm assuming, you know, just with relationships and whatnot, has running taught you anything about other people in general?
Yeah, I mean, running is trial by fire, right? It's to be great at running, you're going to have dedication, perseverance. And when you see someone strap on their shoes and go out for a 10-mile run in 35 in sleeting weather, if I see that person because they want to be great, I know that person understands hard work. They understand sacrifice. They understand perseverance. And not everyone has that. And that's okay. I'm not saying everyone needs to have those characteristics. There's something to be said for someone who's not stupid enough to go run through a thunderstorm.
Right.
But I understand that when you have to appreciate someone's sense of dedication to be able to run through snow and sleet and sunshine and 110 degrees and humidity and whatever nature throws at them, they will not be stopped. That takes a special characteristic to be able to do that.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. So as we're wrapping up, if people want to check out more about Run Gum, is it just rungum.com?
Yeah, rungum.com. And we you know, our mantra is people matter and performance matters. And we really mean that. We want to make sure that people get the most out of their workouts and the most out of their races. Caffeine in the right dose per kilogram can be shown to have as much as a 3% bump in performance. That doesn't sound like a lot, but in my event, that's 3 seconds. It's insane.
Right. That's
you know,
a lot.
That's 6 minutes over 3 hours in a marathon. So it is significant. And we also want to inspire people to be the best athletes that they can be. So we have a podcast, we have a YouTube channel. I write a blog each month. These are about inspiring people to get outdoors, whether it's running, cycling, you know, hunting, fishing, climbing, whatever you like to do, get outdoors, find the energy and the focus to be the best athlete you can be.
Love it. Love it. So rungum.com, nicksimmons.com is Nick's website. If you want to check out what he's doing and connect with him on the social media at Nick Simmons. So, and again, once more, show notes, disruns.com/320. So, Nick, you know, thanks obviously for the time and obviously all the best in the continued recovery and, you know, best of luck at getting that crowning jewel of one more national team next year. We'll be certainly cheering for you and pulling for you and whatever the future holds after that, between Rungum and trail running and marathoning and all that good stuff. Nothing but the best going forward, my friend.
Thanks so much. Great chatting with you.
All right, guys, thank you so much for taking the time to listen to today's episode of the show. I hope that you enjoyed the conversation between Nick and myself, and it's always fun to talk to somebody who's running at a level that few of us could ever get to and ever achieve. And you know, it may not be something that we can relate to, obviously running at the Olympic level or even the national level. But that doesn't make it any necessarily less of an interesting conversation. And there are still some things that I know that I took away from this conversation. I feel like I can you know, help with my running. And I hope you feel the same thing as well. And as always, I'd love to know what it was that stood out to you from this episode. For me, I think the biggest thing that that really stood out to me was when, you know, talking to Nick about, you know, his success and the growth of Rungum and how having that structure of, you know, knowing I have to train at this time and I have to do this thing for this, you know, part of Rungum and, you know, blah, 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 blah. Just that structure that he talked about and how that helps him to make sure that he gets everything in by having a calendar and sticking to it and following it. That's something that I work towards doing. I'm not the greatest at it. I'm not as rigid with my schedule as maybe I should be, but, it's, you know, it's a reminder that, you know, even though I may be busy, I still have time for things. I still have time to make it all work. If I stick to the schedule and, you know, really, really focus on the discipline that it takes to, you know, have that structure and work within the structure to make everything happen. So, you know, no matter what it is, whether you've got business or family or, other obligations, I mean, we're all busy. And, you know, whether or not you're ever going to be running with a shot at making a national team or not, just, you know, really looking at your schedule and trying to make things work, fit it in there, schedule, and have that structure can maybe be what it takes to help you get a few extra miles in your training, which could be the thing that, you know, boosts your fitness to help you get to, you know, whatever your next running goal is. Like, who knows? But, having that structure can definitely help. It's working for him. And he's doing things at a high level, you know, and it's something that I know I need to improve upon. So it was good to hear from somebody as busy as Nick that structure can be a good thing. It can be beneficial. Being busy isn't always the end of the world. So anyway, that was my takeaway. I'd love to know what it was that stood out for you from this episode. Let me know. Shoot me a tweet at DizRuns. Shoot me an email, DizRuns@gmail.com. Or better yet, head over to the show notes for this episode, which you can find at DizRuns.com/320. And leave a comment there, and that way everybody else can kind of see what stood out to you, and we can spark the conversation. So with that, we're gonna go ahead and wrap things up. Thanks again for the sponsors, if you will, of this episode, Picky Bars. Again, if you go to pickybars.com and you decide to give the Picky Club a trial membership, use the code Denny Craze. It's just my name, DennyKraag, and get yourself a free, or not free, but $10 off the first month to try it out You know, if you don't want to continue it, you don't have to, but at least give it a shot. And also the coterie, if you're interested in some coaching, disruns.com/coterie. And let me know what questions you might have, and I'll be happy to answer them for you. So with that, let's go ahead and wrap this thing up today. Let's put a little bow on it. And thanks for listening, guys. I appreciate it. I appreciate your time and your attention. I hope you have a great rest of the day. And I can't wait to talk to you again real soon. Take care, guys.